Hello and welcome to the Morrissey Exchange podcast. The information contained within this podcast has been provided as general advice only and does not take into account any of your personal circumstances or objectives. You should consider if this advice is right for you and consult your financial advisor for further information.
Hello and welcome to the 24th episode of the Morrissey Exchange. Today I'm sitting here with Alex Henderson, my contemporary and friend who works with us here at Shure & Partners. Hello, Alex.
Hello, Ben. Good to be back. Had a lot of demand for me to return to the podcast. That might not be true, actually. It might be more...
Hence why you're here.
Yeah, here we go.
All right, so what we wanted to do today, well, we're just going to have another roundtable discussion. We've been presenting some really interesting topics to you recently, and we just thought it was an appropriate time to round out what's been happening back into the quarter. There's been a lot going on in energy. There's a lot happening in China at the moment, not the least of which in their property market. And the market's got some interesting moves ahead of it based on the volatility that we're witnessing and experiencing at the moment. So without any further ado, let's kick it off into energy. Now, I touched on energy in the weekly last week, and I'm going to write again about it on Friday, but it is such an important component of markets at the moment. Basically, very simply, what we're seeing is a spectacular escalation in the prices of energy to do with a number of factors, largely for minor supply. So we saw from a political perspective, there was such a strong push for the politicians to be seen as turning green, whether it be in Australia, whether it's overseas. They wanted to be seen as supporting the zeitgeist, which was to reduce the reliance on fossil fuels, which makes perfect sense. And I totally get that. But it was without a plan. And so what we've now seen and are absolutely witnessing is the decline in available resources because there were developments that were knocked back. Developers basically were disincentivized from developing any further resources. So you've got a reduction in supply of fossil fuels and the political shift to get people to move towards greener energies is great, but there isn't a supply. So what about the demand side, Alex? Is there any impact from a demand side or is it just supply from your perspective?
No, from my perspective, it is demand as well, because at the moment we're seeing some extreme temperatures in winter and we've seen them in summer as well across Europe. And we were also heading into China into winter as well, the Northern Hemisphere. So we are seeing more demand for things like LNG for heating or the electricity. We've seen a lot of demand coming out of there. So the other part is that China is steaming ahead in terms of creating steel, doing manufacturing, all of that sort of thing. So what do they need for that? They need energy to run their plants. And just the other week, I think we saw that China are having power issues leading to rolling shutdowns of certain industries. Also to halt pollution. So what they have to do, they cut the steel producers. They're keeping the residential homes protected for now, but at some point they've got to, last year at least, they went into rolling blackouts, or they might have been brownouts, I think they're called. So what's happening as well is that the top state-owned energy companies have been told that they must secure supplies for winter at all costs.
Are you old enough to remember the brownouts we had here in the 70s and I think the early 80s?
No, I can't recall that one.
Well, neither can I, of course.
Of course.
Sorry, continue.
And sorry, what they also said would be blackouts won't be tolerated. So I'm not sure if we're going to see that, if they can actually control that. So all of that's meant that, as well as supply of coal coming out of China is reduced. So it's seen a spike in that price of coal as well as electricity and LNG it's coming over to oil as well. So we're seeing that as a secondhand flow on, that the demand is back for oil.
So the perversity with the blackouts, though, is that the Chinese reluctance to buy Australian thermal coal, because of the barnies they're having at the moment, has seen them trying to get supply from elsewhere. Now, they're producing a fair component of their supply internally, aren't they? It's about 80% or something like that.
Something like that, yep.
But the problem is that the mines that are producing it are high-cost mines and very, very inefficient, rely on a huge amount of a labour component as well. But it's actually seen the coal price, the thermal coal price in China, escalate to something like $300 to $400 or US dollars per tonne, whereas even though the Australian coal price is running at a record of about $220 US a tonne, because of this reluctance to buy our coal, they're actually paying almost twice that now internally, which is also having a fairly crippling effect on the property developers, which we'll touch on, and and the flow through costs have been quite substantial. So you moved on to oil. So the coal prices have gone up. The oil prices have gone up as well.
Yeah, absolutely. The oil prices, actually Brent's trading at over $82 this morning or overnight. So, which is the first time we've seen that since September of 2018. So a 3-year high. At the end of 2020, it was $48.52 a barrel. So we are seeing a pushing up in that price, but nowhere near that stratospheric pushing up of the other energy components.
So if oil continues to rise, and there's a strong expectation that the oil price could actually push into the mid-100s, can we roll over to, say, LNG, for example? Is that a cheaper version of energy at the moment?
No, it's actually not. Surprisingly, prices of Asian LNG are at the equivalent of $200 a barrel of oil. So that's huge. So what we're seeing as well is a push up in the oil stocks, Woodside, Oil Search, Santos, these ones, Beach Petroleum, they're all having a run on the back of these increased prices.
As with any product or commodity, the higher a price goes, the greater the capacity for other producers to step in that were previously excluded from producing because their cost of production was too high. The higher the commodity or the product goes, it gives them a greater capacity to produce as well. So there's definitely going to be more supply coming on stream in all of these spaces, whether it's LNG, whether it's oil, whether it's coal, as the prices get to higher and higher levels, because a lot of these developments are already approved. They didn't need to seek further approval or political approval, government approval to go ahead. I suppose the problem is, though, that these aren't just turnkey operations. You don't just walk in, turn the power on, probably not, and get things going. It can take many, many months, up to years, to get these things to start producing again. So, yes, there will be a cap on these prices at some point in time as new production comes in. But don't for a second think that this new production, even shale oil, you know, that could come back in. That's another one of the variable energy supplies. The other part of it, of course, too, is that as these energy costs rise, it further encourages alternatives. So, you know, that leads us to the areas of some of these green energies, which were economically unviable, but it does certainly mean that there is a greater possibility for these things to become the norm if they have greater capacity, if they can be more reliable, even though their cost of production is higher than what the fossil fuels are at the moment.
That's right. And look, uranium, we had it in the podcast a couple of episodes ago. Uranium is obviously one that could come into play there. And you were saying that it's not a turnkey operation. I think Langer Heinrich, was that 6 months to turn that back on or get the plants fully operational?
Yeah, I think that's about right, yeah.
So it's, look, whilst you know, production is incentivized at these prices to come on board. As Ben was saying, it just can't be turned on straight away. I think one other point was shale, the rig count over in the US. It's up around 100-something% since last year.
But okay, so that's already happening.
That's already happening, but they haven't seen the production yet. So yeah, it's, okay. It is coming, but they haven't seen the production increase. So wait for that to come on. But when we're talking at, you know, $200 a barrel or the equivalent of with Asian LNG, it should be a good time for a lot of these Australians.
Yeah, so the price rises are going to impact these companies that Alex mentioned earlier and others for quite a while yet. It doesn't look as though it's going to be a flash in the pan, and these commodity prices are going to stay high for a while.
Yeah. Look, if you look at, say, a Fortescue or an iron ore, where it's coming back the other way, so you can see that the actual prices of the underlying commodity, when they go up, they can stay up there for a long time. And then when they come down the other way, they can also go there for a long time. And same with the equity prices. So I don't think it's too late at this stage to get into oil as a general view. So it's still something there for clients to look at.
Well, there's two parts to that as well, because from my understanding, we're still due further analyst upgrades based on current commodity prices,
yes,
into the stocks, let alone the fact that the commodity prices could actually continue to rise further,
yep,
and then those upgrades that would come along with that as well. So there could actually be another couple of legs in this particular run.
Yep.
I know Clarkey, our energy analyst, who I interviewed in relation to uranium, thinks that the way things are looking, the oil price could easily push towards that $150 mark within a fairly short space of time. So, yeah, there's plenty that can still go on in this energy space. And I'll refer back also to a comment made by the International Energy Agency, where they stated that the transition from a fossil fuel-dominated energy system, which is what we've got around the world at the moment, it's about 85% fossil fuels, to one with zero emissions will require more than $4 trillion per year clean energy investment by the 2030s. So the dollars are absolutely staggering. And I suppose from an investment standpoint, we've got to look at the opportunity that generates. So obviously there's going to be a huge amount of money that gets poured into these alternatives. What are the opportunities? There's going to be battery metals. There's going to be all sorts of components that go into the creation of the fuels. Hydrogen seems to be another topical one, which I'm going to touch on Friday, where there's talk about the development of hydrogen technology in Asia, which is hopefully going to come down here to Australia as well. So there's a huge amount going on. Why? Because there's money to be made, and obviously because we want to do the right thing by our kids and make sure that there is an earth for them to be living on and to enjoy. Anyway, I suppose that's probably enough about energy. I will be writing about it again on Friday. So there is a lot to be looked at in the energy space, and certainly some opportunities for us there to make some coin as well. The next topic I wanted to touch on, which is another one which is certainly hitting the headlines around the world, another one we've touched on recently, is Evergrande. But more specifically, the property development market in China. Now, one of the comments I made as far as Evergrande was concerned was that it's not a Lehman scenario. It's not a company that could bring the world down. What is coming to light, however, is that it's not just Evergrande that is over-indebted, and it could well be a large component of the property development sector in China. So we're starting to learn that there's a lot more of these property developers over there that are in financial difficulty, and it's been hidden from the rest of the world. Mm. We saw another company come to light, Fantasia, who are nowhere near as big as Evergrande. How big are they, Alex?
They've also missed some bond payments, so interest on their bond payments. They've got 12.9 billion dollars in bonds versus Evergrande at 309 billion. So it's a small comparative to Evergrande, but obviously it's a large debt. And the problem is that, you know, if they go under and they go into default, where else is it going to impact? So yeah. It's not just them that have to bear the brunt of this. Who else goes down? Are there workers? Do people get their houses? That sort of thing. And we've seen some protection from the Chinese government with Evergrande to protect the workers. Not so much for the global bondholders, which they're taking on that quite a lot of risk. But look, what it looks like is if there's further to go, do other industries go under? And that's the real fear, I think. And I think that's the contagion problem.
Not just that. How many of them are there? How many of them are that heavily geared and have managed their money so poorly that they just continue to spend with insufficient revenue rolling in?
I've got no idea, to be honest with you, but I know what the government over there have implemented a bit of a traffic light system. I'm not sure if you saw this the other day. They've implemented a traffic light system. So if you've got a certain amount of debt and certain covenants that you need to meet, you can borrow up to or increase your debt by up to 15%. So that's if you've got the green light.
Okay.
If you're on amber, you can only grow it by, say, 5%. And if you're on red, you can't grow your debt. So that's something that the Chinese government are trying to establish, and that's only just been recently come about in response to this, to Evergrande and obviously now Fantasia.
Okay, so let's say that there are a number of property developers over there that are in strife. The flow through obviously goes to commodity demand, which is still strong.
Mm-hmm.
If the commodity demand reduces, then production out of Australia that impacts our financial earnings coming in from overseas. It has a spectacularly significant flow through effect to the rest of the world. So maybe it is more of a significant issue from a global economic perspective than what I'd appreciated. Maybe.
Yep.
There's a good reason the central banks around the world, including Australia, are reluctant to get too excited about pushing up interest rates anytime soon.
Yeah.
Maybe there's greater knowledge at these levels than what we've got that there is real trouble in China. But it also depends on how the Chinese government respond. What are they going to do?
Yep.
How do they deal with it? They've managed to grow their way out of past troubles, but.
Mm.
Ironically, the way they've grown their way out of past troubles was by pushing the property development.
Mm.
So without that and without supporting that space, I mean, maybe they just keep supporting property development and buying out some of the debt or something like that.
Yeah, it's interesting. It'll be really interesting to see how they play it. And, yeah, I don't know what they're going to do. It'll be interesting and the impact on markets overall, supply, demand, the supply chain, the whole thing, it will impact it.
Now, you speak about the impact on markets. Where are we in the Australian market at the moment? Do you feel like there's growth ahead? Are we fully valued at the moment? Where do you think the Australian market sits at the moment?
Well, we've got our colleague up in Sydney, Martin Crabb. He does a what's called a TSR, which is a total shareholder return. So that looks at the capital growth and the dividend expectations of the market for the next 12 months. At the moment, it's around 13.27% and with a 4% yield. So look, it depends obviously on the day that you look at these prices, but with rising equity price expectations can mean it is a good buying opportunity. Typically what Martin looks for is something in the range of 15% TSR, and that typically has been a good buying or an entry point into the market over a number of years. So the problem, I suppose, with this is that those returns are based on expectations, and the analysts, they can tend to be a bit more optimistic than what's actually happening. So as quickly as you can see them going up, these expectations, they can fall pretty quickly. We saw that last year. So, that's something to bear in mind. But with rising commodity or these rising prices in commodities, there's certainly some sectors to look towards that you can pick rather than just buying the market.
Totally agree with you. It's not going to be broad based. Seen the banks have had a good run after they got smashed in March last year, and they're likely to continue to increase their dividends. They're doing reasonably well.
Yep.
But they're not going to rise a great deal from here. There's going to be, I think, healthcare looks relatively expensive from my perspective because a lot of them are still trading on very high PEs.
Yes.
But they're also seen as a protective place to be, an area where they call it flight to safety. A lot of the healthcare companies get bought up on the days when the market gets sold down, but they do look expensive to me. Where I think there's genuine value is in the infrastructure space, not so much the infrastructure funds themselves, but supplying into that infrastructure.
Yep.
We've spoken about that ad nauseum. Obviously, some of these commodity price stocks that are going to benefit from the continued rises in commodities themselves. I still like property. I think that there's real value in there in some areas. You've still got some of these property trusts that are yielding 7-8%.
Yep.
And there's not the sort of risk that yield would suggest, given the hard assets of these particular property trusts or property groups or REITs. Do you have any other areas that you think are worth pursuing?
No, I agree on the property. I think that's a really good point. And a lot of them, if you look at, I'm not suggesting they're like Evergrande, but they don't have the same debt profile. And they don't have that rolling off in the next few years, a lot of them. So,
well, most of them are not developers either. They just hold the property. So it's a much lower risk proposition.
It is. And they're paying out the dividends on some of them on a quarterly basis, which is great. But I think just to go back to infrastructure, you've seen a bit of corporate activity in the last little while. I think we've spoken
about
the
true.
APA, Sydney Airports getting taken over by Industry Funds Management and the Industry Funds. They're also looking, APA have also looking at AusNet as a potential takeover target. So, what else is out there that could be taken over?
So that's in gas distribution?
Yep. So there's a lot of these different takeovers and industry funds are actually leading a lot of them. They've cashed up and they're looking to partner up with different infrastructure players.
Infrastructure is just such a wonderful space for investment because you've always got that ratcheted increase in revenue.
Mm.
And it certainly appeals to the likes of these big super fund players, which has really been led by the Canadian super funds many, many years ago, Brookfield. Because what they did show was that these are long-term investments, but quite often they don't move favourably in the short term. You've got to look at them from a longer-term perspective. And I think as the Australian market matures, some of the industry funds are maturing with it and starting to realise that there are opportunities there. Mm. We'll put to the side that they revalue them internally as they see fit. That's a different story altogether. But yes, there's absolutely value in the infrastructure suppliers, whether it be electrical cable, whether it's nuts and bolts like Energy Technologies in Coventry.
Yep.
But as a good, steady, long-term investment, and without shooting the lights out, certainly infrastructure trusts like the Transurbans, like the even something like Aurizon will do well through an uncertain period that it looks as though we've got at hand at the moment. That probably brings us to a close. We talked for a little bit longer than I expected there. We were going to touch on gold, but we might touch on that next time. Thank you very much for listening. For more information, if you would like to visit our website, which is morrisseygroup.net, or call us on 9268-1110. Thank you, Alex.
Thank you, Ben.
Thank you, Linesman and Ball Boys. We will see you next week.
The Morrissey Group is a corporate authorised representative of Shaw and Partners Limited, ABN 24003. 221583. Our financial services guide is viewable at www.shoreandpartners.com.au. Any content within this podcast is subject to the terms and conditions of Shore & Partners Limited's disclaimer, as viewable at www.shoreandpartners.com.au/disclaimer.